Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Saturday, March 3rd, 2018. I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Bo is back today. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello! Hello, everybody! Hello!
Now, agenda right up front, and then we'll sort of jump... Well, we might talk about a couple things before we jump into it for real. But we're going to do three main segments this time, and I know we were trying to pull it back to two, and then we were doing three, but no intro segment. But Yvonne wants to do an intro segment. Yes, the theme of this week's show is chaos. It is the chaos show.
I was telling Sam
the chaos show
in the last week. Look, we had news here that probably could have been 6 months of a presidency, like, I don't know, 10, 20 years ago.
We could, but, you know, we've been saying that, like, we've had a few slow weeks, but more weeks than not.
But this week has been, but this week has to be, I mean, close to peak insanity.
We are close. I mean, the week before, we also had all that Mueller stuff.
Right.
But
oh, I forgot. Yes, we had a whole bunch. I mean, Jesus Christ.
That was last week. We talked about that a little bit last week with Ed and Alex. Alex joined us last week. Yeah, so another crazy week. But the theme is chaos. This is the chaos show. The three segments will be issues chaos, like the various grenades Donald Trump threw into the gun debate and the trade debate. Then our second segment is going to be corruption chaos, because we've had all kinds of news about, well, especially Jared Kushner, but also, you know, Ben Carson, Ivanka, we've talked a lot about the Russia stuff lately. It's been a little while since we talked about the corruption side, and there's a lot of new stuff on the corruption side, including things that really are starting to look like there may be some quid pro quo going on, but not.
I mean,
but we'll save it for the segment. We'll save it for a segment. And then finally, White House chaos, just the actual stuff that's going on in the White House. Hope Hicks leaving. Is McMaster on his way out? You know, what's happening between with Kelly and Kushner and the battle there? And apparently there are all kinds of reports that have been in the news in the last couple of days that basically Donald Trump is like spiraling out of control. Now, well, we've heard this before, of course, but, you know, apparently, you know, wandering the halls, angry, yelling at people because all of the people he's trusted over the years are gone or leaving. Anyway, so those are our three main segments. But before that, Yvonne did want to say something. We wanted to tell a story of some sort. And I don't know the story. Something happened with your phone and emergencies.
Okay.
What's going on?
All right. Look, I don't know if you saw in the news. There was some article about an Apple repair facility having some issue with emergency 911 calls that all of a sudden – their phones there kept making accidental emergency 911 calls.
So wait, this is phones that were in for repair at Apple?
There were phones that I think it's either a repair or refurbishment facility.
And they were just randomly calling 911.
Yes. Okay. And this is, I believe this has to do with this new auto call feature. I'm pretty, well.
When you do the triple click or whatever, right?
Whatever the hell the frickin' button sequence is. Okay, all right. Which I have now disabled.
I think I've got the disabled as well.
I just disabled it because this is what happened. Okay. I saw this article and I didn't think much of it. Okay.
All right. And then you called 911 accidentally.
Well, eight times in a row. Not exactly. Okay, look, I was let me make it worse. Look, I am about to go through security at Palm Beach International Airport, which is the one that's close to my closest to my house, to head on a business trip on Monday. OK. And it happened to be that because of some time or whatever, I had a conference call that was starting just as I was about to go through the security checkpoint. OK. And I really didn't the flight was time was coming up for the flight, and I really didn't want to stay before the security checkpoint. I wanted to make it to the gate. So it was like right around when the call was about to start. So I was just like, look, let me just go through the checkpoint. So as I go through the I have pre-check. So I was going through that line where you don't have to take off your most of your stuff or whatever. So I'm just going through there. And as the call is starting, I say, damn it. Okay, let me just stuff my phone in the bag, okay, with the call going. And because I've done this before. Uh-huh. I'll just put the phone in the bag, let the call go, and I'll grab the phone on the other end, and I'll just connect back to the call right after it passes through the x-ray machine. Okay, great. Right?
Uh-huh.
So I grab my phone with the headphones, just stuffed it in there, as it left the call going, and I go. And it was a Skype audio call, by the way, that
okay.
I was on. All right, because it was a Skype conference. And so I just stuffed it in there, walked through the metal detector, and go out and grab my bag. And all of a sudden, I pull the phone out, and I see that I am connected to a 911 dispatcher.
Yes.
And I'm like, what the F? And I'm like, actually, I hung up. But of course, because of the protocol, they actually called me back.
Right. Because you could have been in distress and...
Right. And I had to explain. I'm like, and somehow, I don't understand the key sequence, whatever the hell it is. Apparently, if you hit the keys in the right way, you keep it pressed for about 5 seconds, it will launch the call.
Right.
And so apparently when I just stuffed the damn phone in the bag, it just kept those two keys depressed and just launched the fucking 911 call. So then I'm trying to figure out how the hell do I get back on my conference call. Okay.
Right.
So just
to be clear, before trying to get back on your conference call, when you explained this to the 911 operator, were they like, oh, okay, no problem?
Yeah, basically. That was pretty much it.
Okay.
So you
didn't have, like, the SWAT team to send on the airport or anything?
No, none of that. Thankfully, you know, nothing like that happened. I just was able to, you know, figure that out. But then, of course, afterwards, I remembered, of course, the recent news article I read about this, and then I went and disabled this function. Because I think I'd come close to having this activated on a couple of other occasions.
Now, just to be clear, I looked it up. The way this works by default is if you hold down the side button and either of the volume buttons and continue holding it down, it will call 911. Now, there is a default countdown sound.
Yes.
That happens when you're pushing these, that's apparently relatively loud, that's supposed to warn you so you can let go or hit cancel if you don't mean to do this.
Sure. I heard the sound. Yeah, but the thing is, but if you put it in your bag and it's just pressing the keys, no matter what the hell damn sound it's making.
Right. So there are a couple things you can do. There are a couple options on this thing. One is you can turn on an option so you can activate it with 5 clicks instead.
Yeah.
But that's an also, so it doesn't turn this off. If you turn off the feature like you did, you can still make an emergency call without actually going to the phone app and hitting 911. You invoke it the same way. But then you have to manually slide an emergency SOS slider.
Correct, then you have to make an emergency call, right.
Yeah.
Which, that's where I've left it right now. I think I'm more comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Because on multiple occasions before, I'd seen that I'd come close to doing that. I like what Apple's doing. So Apple's trying to make sure that you can more easily make an emergency call. But I think it got to a point where it was just... too easy. I mean, all I did was put my damn phone in a bag and it called 911.
Yeah. I mean, it seems that seems odd even that, like, just throwing it in the bag that it would be pushing those buttons and continuously. It must have been, like, jammed in there or something.
Yeah, it was jammed in there. I don't usually put my phone in that bag. It's a small bag. Hmm. And so it was, you know, with the headphones and other stuff in there, it just happened to have been able to press both buttons at the same time.
Huh?
And voila.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is, of course, like, you know, if you're walking around with your phone and something does happen that is an emergency, like, you don't want to be fumbling around. First you unlock the phone, then you try to, like, where's my phone app? You know, is it like, you know, like, most people may have their phone app in a fairly standard place. Mine's not, you know, like, so I may not even be on a screen that has the phone app. And, you know, find the phone app, open the phone app, go to the dial section because you probably don't have it as one of your favorites or whatever, hit 911, blah, 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 blah. It's just multiple steps involved here, whereas they want to make it so that if there's a real emergency, you can just hold down the button, boom, you're there. And
boom.
You don't have to remember anything else. Of course, the problem with that also is this is a rare enough function. Like, I didn't know without looking it up that the way to get this was to hold those two buttons down.
I had heard about this right when the phone was
I mean, launched. I knew the function existed, but I don't have, like, at the top of my mind, like, in an emergency situation, I wouldn't remember. I'd be thinking, like, oh, shit, now what do I press? And then by the time I've thought through that, I might as well have called the normal way.
Can't you say to it, like, and I don't want to say it, hey, S-I-R-I, because I do have it turned on, call.
Yeah. You probably can.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
Let's check real quick.
Yeah. I don't know. No.
No, I wasn't actually going to try to ask Siri that.
Oh, okay.
I was Googling.
Oh, like, Jesus Christ. No more 911 calls now.
Important. Siri dials emergency services with these iPhone commands. Do not test needlessly.
Yes, thank you.
So, yes, there are a variety of ways that you can tell Siri to call emergency numbers with phrases that would make sense. I'm not going to.
Yeah, we can't read them because then otherwise we're going to be calling them. Yes. All right. So,
but things like call emergency services, dial 111 with the appropriate Siri invocation beginning of that or pushing down the button to get it. Phone 911 or in other lines, you know, in other countries, whatever the 911 equivalent is, because it's different in different countries.
Right.
And Siri will respond with calling emergency services in 5 seconds and then do a countdown, and during which time you can cancel.
Okay. All right. So anyway, so that's why, yeah, I just, you know, I really didn't like dialing 911 by mistake. I didn't even do it!
Okay, so let's take a break from Yvonne causing chaos by calling 911.
It's part of the chaos week. Yeah, I guess it makes sense.
So after the break, we're coming back, and the first chaos we are talking about is issues chaos because of our president who is so amazingly...
Informed,
consistent, predictable, all of these things.
Always on the same page with the staff.
On this, yes. Deep coordination there.
Deep.
We will be back after this exciting message.
Celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we're back. Let's start with guns. Because... unlike trade, where there may actually be some level of consistency in Donald Trump's positions over the years, guns seems to be something where he has wandered around a little bit, even within the last 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
After the shooting in Florida, he had a couple of those town halls. He came out fairly quickly in favor of... raising the age limit, having guns in school, and a couple of other things. I forget exactly what the right up the front things were. And then this week, he had this meeting on guns, bipartisan congressional people, and there are a few other people in the room, and they started to have this conversation. And he basically started agreeing with a whole lot of Democratic positions.
Right.
He started telling Republicans that, you know, they were saying, well, we want the reciprocity for concealed carry across states, and he's just like, no, you're not going to get that. You don't have votes. Forget about that. Like, repeatedly. And they were sort of dumbfounded. And then he also, at one point, went well beyond anything any Democrat has been saying, because they were talking about mechanisms for these... I forget the exact name of it, but these essentially restraining orders that remove guns, basically saying this person is a danger and we need to take away their weapons. And the process that has been proposed and has actually been implemented in a few states, I believe, is, you know, you go to court and you basically get an order. By providing evidence that, you know, this person is dangerous in such and such a way and blah, blah, blah. And then you get an order that they're going to take away their weapons. And then there's an appeals process. There's this whole thing. It's got lots of due process around it. And Donald Trump's quote was,
due process, just take them away, something like that.
Yeah, basically. He says, let's take them away earlier. Let's take the guns away first and have due process later. Yeah.
That sounds like the quintessential, like, Trump, like, quote.
Well, here's the thing about it. It is perfectly a Donald Trump thing, you know, because it's all about, well, the rules don't matter. Let's just do stuff. And look,
fuck with these rules.
You and I have had these conversations before. We are not opponents of gun control. We think there's all kinds of reasonable gun control you can do. However, this is
do believe in due process.
Yeah, this is authoritarian in the extreme.
Right. I mean, I believe in the law and due process. You know, somebody's got to, okay, you want to do something like that, it's got to be codified in the law. There's got to be some kind of due process associated with it. That's it.
Yeah, due process is
what the
kind
hell
of
is
important.
That? What is that? Due process. Who needs that?
Now,
we
know,
don't need that, right?
I know a lot of conservatives get upset with the idea of, you know, just... For instance, if there was just a ban on all semi-automatic weapons or something like that, that's penalizing a lot of innocent people who would be responsible for their guns, etc., and call that an absence of due process. But that is actually due process. If you pass that law, it goes through the whole thing, there's consideration, blah, blah, blah. You know, you may not like that law. And, you know, it would probably, of course, be constitutionally challenged, and there'd have to be a determination of, you know, is it a violation of the Second Amendment or not, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that is the process. This kind of thing, what Donald Trump was saying, is just like, we just don't like them. Take their guns.
Right.
You know, I'm not a fan of guns. I am still
and
not
I,
a fan.
I'm not for that.
I'm still not a fan of just arbitrarily coming in and saying, no, we don't like you. We're taking them.
Sort. Yeah. Jeez.
Because, of course, there's so many opportunities for that to be abused. You need to have standards and processes and ways to appeal and all of this kind of stuff. That kind of thing's important, you know? Because otherwise you just have, you know, completely arbitrary, you know, we don't like the look of that person. They shouldn't have weapons.
Of course not. They shouldn't have weapons.
And of course, given our society, that would translate into, like, you know, this fine, upstanding, young, white neo-Nazi is fine with weapons, but this black guy with the Black Lives Matter t-shirt, oh no, he shouldn't have a gun.
Exactly. You know? No, I mean, look, I think that you and I think, for the most part, have been very consistent on this part about law and due process. Now, you know,
I would just like to say, for instance, one of the things that's been out there is, like, let's expand the do not fly list so that nobody on the do not fly list can buy guns. And my reaction to that is, no, you've got to be insane. The do not fly list itself is bad. You have to fix that. If that was a proper adjudicated process, maybe I would consider that. But as it is, that thing's a monstrosity that's abused and
But you could fix that list.
You could fix that list. But as it exists right now, it's horrible because there's no due process. And therefore, I don't want to expand it.
Now, I do think that if you're on the I think that maybe you shouldn't be banned, but I think that if you are on the no-fly list, that if they're doing a background check, that should be a red flag, okay, which needs to be determined, obviously, by talking about due process, okay, why you are on there, and therefore to make sure that it's not a problem. Because there are issues with that no-fly list, but one of the things that they do with that no-fly list now is that they have a process that if you, for some reason, are on there by mistake, they do give you a what they call a redress number in order to correct that and so forth. So you can, like, say, use that as a flag. It doesn't necessarily mean
in any case. They don't want to deep dive into that.
But the point is, what we're talking about is you can set up a process. Our process does not involve take away guns first, ask questions later.
Anyway, so we left this meeting. And I must say, this meeting was incredibly amusing. And of course, it's a replay of the immigration one from like last month or two months ago or whenever it was, Donald Trump came into the meeting and started saying all kinds of things that are completely opposite from his party's views on the issues. And at that last one, at the immigration issue, there was somebody right beside him who was like, oh, no, that's not what you meant, Mr. President, you know, whatever. And then his staff turned him around afterwards. This time, apparently, there was no one sitting right next to him to do that in real time. But of course, people, the interesting part of it this time was that after this happened, and there was no backtracking within the meeting itself, he was very, you know, really, he was pro-gun control, you know, is the bottom line. He was coming out in favor of all kinds of Democratic proposals. But afterwards, what happened was not even like his spokespeople coming out immediately and saying, oh, no, that's not what he meant. Nothing like that. It's just more like everybody ignored it because nobody believed it. Nobody believed it would have any impact on actual policy whatsoever, because A, they didn't believe he'd expressed the same things 24 hours later. And in fact, a couple days later, he had another meeting with the NRA and came out of it with everybody saying, oh, we had a really awesome meeting and blah, blah, blah. And he believes in due process, et cetera, et cetera. And he's not for gun control, et cetera. Right. And B, even if he does mean it, there's not a lot of belief that the fact that he believes it matters at all, because his staff isn't backing him up on that. He's got no momentum to move it. Congress is basically like, yeah, whatever, old man. You know, the Republicans in Congress aren't whipping around and saying, oh my God, Donald Trump said that, so therefore we have to do something. Like, they've been clear. They're not even putting gun control of any sort on the legislative agenda for the next few weeks.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of like, okay, he can rant and say whatever he wants. It doesn't matter. Which is a very interesting thing that you don't expect to hear about an American president. You know, basically everybody on all sides of the aisle, you know, basically it was just like, oh, well, whatever. There he goes ranting again. It doesn't matter. Like, you know, you'd think Republicans would be completely freaking out about his pro-gun control agenda that he spouted there. You'd think Democrats would be like, okay, let's go. You know, none of
but
them.
But I think,
nobody.
Well, yeah, because they know that, you know, they've seen this thing happen before where he's been like all of a sudden going and spews all these things. And then once his advisors or whatever you want to call them, his flunkies or whatever, get a hold of him, and then they're like, oh, well, you don't really mean any of that.
Right.
Right.
Okay, so I guess that's about it for guns. I mean, he threw the grenade into it and everybody was like, what the hell? And then ignored him. And whatever momentum there is or is not on the gun control issue, you know, these kids in Florida are going to have a lot more influence on that than Donald Trump does. You know?
You know, true.
Now, having said that, it also looks like, you know, the typical pattern of, you know, the Democrats are saying whatever, are somewhat paying attention to the issue now, but the Republicans aren't caving on this. They're not all of a sudden saying, you know, let's do this. It's important.
Well, look, in the state of Florida, they actually are after first the, like shelving the legislation. Yeah, they are pushing through some legislative changes, like right now. You know, there is a bill to raise the age to purchase and possess an assault rifle in Florida from 18 to 21. And to spend $400 million to strengthen the school security and fund mental health counselors. The fact that they're actually even, like, considering this at this point is a big change from what's happened in every other one of these.
Yeah, that's true. And, I mean, and you do have Republicans giving lip service to some of the less controversial aspects of this. They're not calling for universal background checks. They're not calling for, you know, banning classes of weapons, but they are saying, okay, let's deal with the bump stock thing. Okay, let's maybe do something with the age. Let's maybe do something with these, weapons restraining orders that I was talking about earlier. So there are a few areas where Republicans are at least willing to talk. I don't know that that's going to result in anything on the federal level, but they're at least willing to talk. It is different. But I think for the most part, this is, you know, we're already in March of a midterm election year. This is not going to be something that results in legislation of any sort during the course of this year. This is something that will become an election issue. And it's a question of how people leverage that or not as we move in the next few months towards November.
Well, if you believe the polling data that has been coming out, the Republican position, well, the NRA popular. Position is not popular at all, period.
Right.
This is just not a popular position. So I really struggle still even to this day to understand why so many Republicans hold on to this fucking position. Given the lack of popularity of any of this.
Well, and here's the thing. You know, Donald Trump was jumping up and down at this meeting saying, don't be afraid of the NRA. I'll stick up for this, blah, blah, blah. If anybody actually believed him that he would actually carry through with that and he would have the backs of any Republicans who went a few steps in this direction, then maybe you'd get a few Republicans on board here. But the reality is he has zero political capital at all. You know?
Well, that's the problem. I mean, he's going to watch your back. I mean, with what?
Yeah, nobody believes in the slightest that he would carry through on anything he said. No one's going to go out on a limb on Donald Trump's say-so.
Nope, definitely not. Nope, you know, nope.
Although there's still a lot of them going out on a limb going, the witch hunt, Russia, blah, blah, blah. Although less than there were, you know, they're getting a little quiet, but.
I don't know.
Okay. Next, trade. So you're the big, trade and, you're the person who talks about this kind of thing on a show. Tell us what the hell is going on with trade and what grenade Donald Trump threw in there.
It's very simple. He decided for some reason that he wanted to throw some tariff action out there on aluminum and steel. His staff wasn't even prepared for this. They were supposed to have something that they were going to talk about next week. He threw the grenade out there.
But let's specify a little why this is the case and why his staff was stumped and surprised and blah, blah, blah by this. Because they shouldn't have been. Because this is actually one of the things he's been fairly consistent on going back years. It was actually something he talked about regularly on the campaign trail.
Oh, no, that part I get.
But more than that, like a few months ago, there was a story, and I think it was probably Axios, but I'm not entirely sure, that basically said Donald Trump went to his economic staff and said, I want tariffs. Bring me tariffs. I want tariff stuff I can sign. You know? And basically, the majority of his economic staff, there are a couple of exceptions who were sort of cheering this tariff
stuff
on.
Said, you're nuts.
But the majority of them said, well, they didn't say you're nuts to your face. But what they kept doing was stalling him, bringing him proposals that didn't involve tariffs, trying to convince him to go in other directions, blah, 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 blah. You know, the one thing they didn't do was the thing he told them to go do. So basically, what happened here is Donald Trump got fed up with his staff coming right. back to him with all kinds of shit right. that was everything except the one thing he asked for.
And then he just started just spewing out.
So he basically said, fuck you all then. I'm going to announce it myself. And then you figure it the fuck out.
Right. 25%.
By the way, the reports are it's 25% because he likes the nice round number.
Yes, 25%.
There was some recommendation from the pro tariff people.
7.some% or so, whatever.
I even heard 24 in one case, but like the pro tariff group within his administration, and there is one, had some proposals with some numbers that were like calculated based on some sort of basis. I don't know what it was, but there was some sort of rationale behind why we're picking this number instead of some other number. But Donald Trump is just like 25 and 10. I like them. They're nice, round, nice.
Of course, and then he decided to, what the hell was he said? I like trade wars or something. What the hell was the thing he said about liking trade wars?
I'll get you the exact quote. Here we go. Hold on. Okay, he had a series of quotes on Friday, March 2nd. Mm-hmm. The first of them, well, there were some about Alex Baldwin and SNL and blah, blah, blah.
Alec.
Well, he said Alex.
He's an idiot.
Donald Trump's tweet says Alex Baldwin.
He's a fucking moron.
And he repeats the word Alex several times in the tweet.
He's such an idiot.
The second tweet, he changed it to Alec.
He's such an idiot.
Oh, actually, he retweeted the same thing. It was basically the same tweet. He just changed it because he fixed that misspelling and a couple other things. but anyway, regardless of that tweet, here are the tweets on trade. Tweet number one. Yeah. When a country, USA, is losing many billions of dollars on trade with virtually every country it does business with, trade wars are good and easy to win. Example, when we are down $100 billion with a certain country and they get cute, don't trade anymore. We win big. It's easy.
Okay. All right.
So break this down to me, Yvonne. Okay. Why is this wrong? What's going on here?
Maybe because I'm not, I've studied all this business school stuff or whatever.
Yeah, they just brainwashed you, Yvonne. You're obviously wrong.
Can you try to fucking explain to me what the hell he was talking about there?
So, okay, well, when a country is losing many billions of dollars on trade, Yvonne. Okay, so first of all, what does that even mean? So let's start with the trade deficits, because maybe you can explain this to me a little bit. What my understanding of the trade deficit is, you're basically saying dollars in versus dollars out, but you're not taking into account the value of the stuff you're buying with those dollars. Because at least in theory, right, if you buy $100 million worth of stuff, you're getting $100 million worth of value out of that trade. That's the whole meaning of trade. So it's
merchandise. It doesn't measure services. The other thing that it doesn't measure, for example, is say, I'm Apple, right?
Yeah.
I manufactured all these phones over there, and I shipped all these physical phones like over here, right? But the profits are really made by an American company, right? It's not really calculated in that stupid deficit figure. Okay. All right. It's just really bizarre. I mean, there is a certain thing about, Apple selling iPhones doesn't count as American exports. Okay.
Okay.
Even though all the profit is being made by an American company.
Because they're Chinese exports, because that's where they're built.
Correct.
Okay.
So, I mean, in the end, look, the thing is that because of the globalization of our supply chain for everything around the world, I find it very difficult to try to get hung up on a trade deficit specifically and how good or bad it is. I understand trying to create jobs in one place or another in terms of manufacturing, in terms of those kinds of jobs that, you know, he's been talking about. And other countries are much better at creating those. Say, like Germany, for example, is actually quite good at generating those kinds of jobs. But focusing on, you know, steel and aluminum is ridiculous. Okay? Ah, countries need steel and aluminum in order to have a country. Dude, Jesus Christ. I mean, what are we talking about? This ain't 1920, man.
Well, okay? one of the things that have been pointed out by people that I think is one of those things that's completely over Donald Trump's head is, you know, if you compare the number of people employed in the steel industry today versus the number of people employed in industries that use steel.
Use the steel, yes.
it's like a factor of 10 or more.
That's right. That's correct. And so therefore you're really screwing like the people who are the consumers of the steel that are using it to manufacture shit like cars and tractors and all kinds of shit like that. So, I mean, it's this just there is no good reason right now to impose this thing. Steel, aluminum and steel manufacturers in the U.S., as far as I understood also recently, they were making money. So it's not exactly like that industry was like suffering because of this right now. That industry has shrunk because of the dislocation that's happened in large part because also of the demand for like raw materials like steel. China has risen to make this much steel because basically they're building a freaking country from scratch. So they have built this massive amount of steel making capacity that they have over there, which in part when we're not doing that kind of a transformation of America.
I guess I'm still like a little, you know, economically illiterate about exactly what the trade deficit means and all this kind of stuff. But what I can see is there is nobody, almost nobody out there is saying, yeah, tariffs are what we need here. This is going to help in some way.
Yeah, and that doesn't help anything at all right now.
Even if you are doing this, the argument again is, okay, let's say this does actually help the steel and aluminum industry in America. And because they can raise prices a bit and blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
The net effect on the overall economy is still negative.
Correct.
And so you're getting a small gain for a small industry while hurting a much larger industry.
Right.
And all the consumers that use any products that have steel or aluminum in them, which look around you is pretty much everything.
Doesn't that make sense that you screw a whole bunch of people in order to do something that you talked about in your campaign that made no sense whatsoever?
Well, but here is the thing though. And
that's where it's not the politician. You know, we talked about all these politicians promise all this stuff during the campaign and then never carry anything through. A lot of times because they promise a whole bunch of shit, which is just completely ridiculous bullshit. Okay. So, but Trump is doing it. Yep. He's like, you know, he wants a tariff.
Well, so,
and it doesn't matter, you know, how nonsense it is.
So here's one argument I have heard that if, let's assume for the moment, no retaliation of any sort, no actual trade war. And then we'll see what happens if we don't assume that in a second. But assume no retaliation. So one argument I've seen is, yes, this will cause aluminum and steel to cost more in the United States. Yes, this will cause some products to rise in price, but it's going to be a relatively small rise and it'll be absorbed and you won't really notice it that much. And so all in all, you will have boosted the steel industry. Yeah, a couple other industries won't like it, but they'll be fine. So what's the downside?
The downside is that if other countries get pissed off because of the tariff, then they start retaliating.
If there is no retaliation, is there a downside in and of itself, or is there a downside?
I think they're minimizing what the downside is, especially when you're talking about a 25% tariff. Okay, on steel. and that there may be certain parts of the industry where the price doesn't make that much of a difference. But I guarantee you that there will be certain sectors that will be substantially hurt.
Is the end result just a little bit of an increase in inflation? Because we've been hearing for a while that inflation is too low anyway, and it would be good to boost it up a little bit.
No, I think usually the effects of something like this, when I've seen like some kind of a tariff or a tax imposed, has usually been that there is a specific segment that gets nailed with massive job losses because they cannot absorb the financial impact of what the fuck they did. And so that sector usually gets fucked. I can't pinpoint exactly which one is a big steel user right now where this would really cause a lot, that level of pain. But I can guarantee you that there will be, there probably is economically some people with a 25% tariff that are really, really, really going to suffer. And that's usually the effect. I remember, you know, the tax I have in my mind right now, that wasn't a tariff, but many years ago, like about 25 years ago, a luxury tax was passed on. It was like to raise taxes, to raise revenue and cut the deficit, a luxury tax. And it was assessed on cars that were worth more than a certain amount, boats and other things and whatever. The boat manufacturing industry took that. For whatever reason, the impact of the price increase of the luxury tax took such a massive impact on the boat industry. Like more than 50% of the jobs in the boat industry were lost over the next 2 years that tariff happened. Many boat makers went bankrupt.
Okay, so let's jump into.
So that's what I'm.
Let's jump into the scenario where but it actually is likely that some of the countries affected by this would be pissed and would do something.
Yes.
Because Donald Trump has also said no exceptions. Every country. This isn't going to be targeted on country A, B, and C.
Here's the biggest problem that I heard today.
Yeah.
So they're in the middle of all these sessions for talking about negotiations about NAFTA, and they had made it all the way down this list. Listen, basically some people are saying that if they do this, that this may be the breaking point on NAFTA, period. That this may torpedo the entire NAFTA agreement because it goes completely against NAFTA.
Well, Donald Trump doesn't want NAFTA anyway, so.
Well, he's saying that they're negotiating, so they've been doing all these negotiating sessions, to change this, right? Okay, and so. They've made progress, I heard, blah, 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 but that this was a fucking grenade to that entire negotiation.
Because, of course, Canada is one of the places that we import these things from, right?
Correct, yes.
And a lot of our European allies as well, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
So, do we see, first of all, let's start with, do we think this will actually happen? Because as you mentioned, Donald Trump spouted off about this. There has been no staff preparation.
Listen, if you made me put money right now on the table, whether they are going to do this next week, I would put money on the table on the answer being no. Because every damn time that something like this is like happened, it's like, look, it's the same shit as the stupid gun legislation.
Well,
man.
And also another example that's very parallel to this is Donald Trump announcing that they were kicking all the transgender folks out of the military.
Right.
And the military was like, what? What are you talking about? We'll do a study. Once you actually give us a real order instead of something on Twitter, and then they'll do a study and they're going to take a year. And then at the end of that, and it's looking like at this point, the recommendation of the study is not to do this. But again, this is also one of those things where basically everybody around Donald Trump is taking an order that they disagree with and slow walking it and making it not happen. But Donald Trump is getting really pissed about this.
Right. Yeah.
And so at some point, when does he, say, no, I'm not having any of this.
People were saying whether this is part of his like supposedly art of the deal bullshit thing.
Okay.
You know, oh, let me just throw the grenade out there and just demand something irrational, as he usually does in order to, you know, get people to get to the table. The other day, you know, I remember, you know, this is really, this movie is very stupid, but it just scared me also at the same time. So I'm flipping through channels, and there is this movie where there is this president of the United States that all of a sudden, like, launches nuclear, has all these people like China, North Korea, the Russians, all these the UK, France in a room. And he goes and, like, all of a sudden, in the middle of a meeting with them, just launches nukes at them. Okay?
Okay.
And they all, like, right there, order a retaliatory strike on the U.S. at the same time. Okay? And then he says, oh, just kidding. And he hits the abort button and, like, blows up all the nukes on the way.
Okay.
And I'm just like... This is a. I saw only a few minutes of this. I didn't watch the rest of the movie when I realized it's some G.I. Joe movie that there is out there. Okay? And apparently there's some psychopath that is in the presidency. And I'm like, this movie's like 5 years old. And I'm like thinking, oh, for fuck's sakes. I'm like, really?
So, okay. So,
I got any ideas.
So if this actually happens, then do you see, like, are we going to have massive retaliation right away and, like, spiraling effects of this? And if so, how fast does that happen? How long until we see, like, day-to-day effects of something like this happening?
There have been other times. Are we talking years out or months? I expect some minor retaliation, but I think that most people will probably not try to. I think there's going to be a lot of pissed off people and there will be some retaliation, but I don't expect this to turn into 1929.
Because, frankly, you know, we're talking about Donald Trump's staff ignoring him. The rest of the world is trying their best to ignore him, too.
Right.
And so if he does something stupid and irrational, for the most part, the rest of the world is going to try
not to do the irrational thing.
Try to not escalate it because of that. And basically everybody playing the long game of, well, we don't know how long a game, but basically playing the let's wait him out. At some point, whether it be, you know, sooner because of something Mueller does, or at the end of the first term, or even at the end of the second term, at some point, Donald Trump is going to be gone and replaced by somebody rational again. So let's just wait it out. There's no reason to burn all our bridges just because we got a crazy guy for a couple of years. We can suck it up and deal with whatever nonsense there is. And then whoever comes in next is going to fix it.
Right.
And that's, yep, Republican or Democrat.
You know? Right. Yeah.
Anyway, this is also, just like the guns issue, this is an issue where there are actually very few people in either party who are at this point for this kind of protectionist policy. You know, sort of the mostly free trade with some regulations world that we've gotten ourselves into over the last, you know, 80 years is actually fairly damn popular. It's worked out pretty well. You know, it's resulted in a lot of economic growth on all sides.
Right.
You know, yes, other parts of the world have grown a lot, but so has the United States, and we've benefited a lot from all of this kind of stuff. And I think that's partially one of the things that Donald Trump still has a fundamental... It's impossible for him to understand win-win scenarios. There has to be a winner and a loser. And so even in a scenario where, you know, everybody comes out better... Yeah, if the other guy comes out a little bit better than we do, well, that's a loss, and we can't allow that.
I mean, that's – I think you hit that on the head. There's no win-win for him. He thinks everything is some kind of zero-sum game. He really truly talks like Gordon Gekko from the movie in Wall Street in the 1980s. I mean, where everything is a zero-sum game to him. And he just cannot comprehend how trade is mutually beneficial. Just cannot. Doesn't register in his brain.
And so, yeah. So just like with guns, You know, Republicans were freaking out about what he was doing here. In this case, Democrats were kind of not happy either, but we're sort of chuckling a little bit about it, I guess. But for the most part, on both things, the majority of the reaction seems to be, well, we'll believe it when we really see it. And I mean, the stock market was a little freaked out, though.
You know, because I learned this in economics in college about how trade, like, you know, but didn't his economics professor from Penn say something in the news like last year that he was a complete idiot student?
Yes, I believe I did hear that. Yes.
Yeah, he did.
Well, it was one of his professors from school. I don't know which one.
And I believe it was his economics professor. So this, you know, this whole thing with the tariffs just proves it, like, right completely, that he has no understanding of how the U.S. economy currently really works.
Okay. Let's take a break, and we're going to talk about corruption and then the White House. And we're going to try to do this relatively quick because it's getting really, really late where Yvonne is. Back after this. Hey, we know when you listen to this show, you have thoughts about what we say. You probably want to vent about what we got wrong or what we left out, right? Or maybe you want to suggest some future topics we just haven't gotten to yet. Well then, tell us all about it. Right now there are four ways to get feedback to us. First, you can go to the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page and leave comments on the post where we announce all the new episodes. Second, you could go to curmudgeonscorner.com, that's with a hyphen, and leave a comment there instead. Third, both Yvonne and I are on Twitter. You can talk to me at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E, or Yvonne at I-M-B-O, I-M-B-O-U. Finally, if you don't want to make your comments in a public forum like that, just email me directly at abulsme@abulsme.com. Again, that's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. But, you know, if you don't want us to mention your feedback on the show, be sure to say so, because otherwise we're probably going to respond to your comments on a future show, because, you know, that's what makes the discussion. Thanks, and we look forward to hearing from you. Okay, corruption. Let's see some of the stories that have come out this week, and we'll save Kushner for last, I guess. But one, I guess this was actually last week, but we didn't really talk about it. There's this whole thing with Ben Carson and spending tens of thousands of dollars on decorating his office, and the quote was, "You can't even buy a decent chair for $5,000."
So he spent $31,000 on some piece of furniture with like some like I don't need to understand why it looked like something to like hold china. It said some kind of like a thing like I heard a dining table. I don't really understand even what the hell he bought, and why the hell would it cost $31,000?
You know, and look, I'm not one to talk. I'm sitting at a jury rigged desk that's like part of an IKEA thing, and then part of a fish tank stand.
Okay,
and,
I just want to say,
I'm cheap like that because I really don't see the point of doing anything more than that. It serves my purpose, but I understand if you're like an executive in an office somewhere, you want to have some nice wood furniture that looks impressive when people come in and blah blah blah.
Okay,
but this still sounds a little excessive.
Well, look, I have this piece of furniture that I bought here like 20 years ago. Okay, all right, just getting pretty old, which is of wood, which is meant to look really nice. Okay, all right. And it was from a very expensive store. Okay, it was only a couple of $1,000. It was $2,000, maybe $3,000, I'm sure. It wasn't any more than that. Okay.
And it's probably the kind of it's intended to last decades and
look
nice.
It's 20 years old. Yeah, okay.
The crap I have here is a couple hundred bucks, but I expect to change it out for something new every 4 to 5 years max.
No. This thing is 20 years old and it's still in completely rock solid shape. But my point is, I mean, look, I bought it from a stupidly, I think I think I bought it from a catalog that, if I remember correctly, was owned by Neiman Marcus, for God's sakes, which is not a cheap store. Okay, all right? And it was only a couple of $1,000. I don't understand what the fuck you needed to really buy for an office that could remotely – I mean, for the purpose that he said he wanted it, that could remotely cost that kind of money.
Even more to the point, other than just, like, the wasting money, this violated the guidelines. There was a defined budget that is allowed for the secretary of the whatever to redecorate, blah, blah, blah. There's a defined amount. There's certain stuff they can spend. He wanted to spend more than that. He put it in. The appropriate staff member who got that request basically said, no, sorry, you can't do that. That's not allowed within the rules. And so they took that staff member, reassigned them, demoted them to a less prestigious job because they had the nerve to say no because Ben Carson was breaking the rules.
Right.
And presumably put someone in there who would sign off on it anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is apparently this admin's MO.
Well, and this ties into the people with the first class air tickets, the people with the private jets, the helicopters. Yep. Another one of the stories that came out is, I forget which cabinet secretary took a helicopter ride somewhere, but where there was absolutely no need to take a helicopter ride. But not only that, they repurposed somebody, a pilot, who had been assigned to fighting forest fires or something, for the purpose of shepherding this guy around for something, you know. So, you know, there's all of this kind of stuff going on amongst the cabinet. So it's rampant. And then we've got the latest note about Ivanka being involved in some trade deal in Vancouver, Canada, and, you know, them having to do something to whatever, and so it's owned by various foreign entities who might have interest with the administration. So Ivanka's doing this kind of stuff. And then the big one that came out this week was at least two different things about Jared and Jared Kushner, and I'm not even sure I'm going to remember all of them, but there was a couple of big loans to his Kushner Industries from people who were at the White House for meetings right before. So the sequence was, you know, some executive from the company that was considering the loans, and I think it was like Apollo something and Citibank.
Apollo Group, which is a private equity group, and then there was Citigroup, yes.
Yeah, and so the sequence of events was the executives from those companies had a meeting at the White House with Jared Kushner where they supposedly were talking about other stuff, and maybe they did. Who knows? Who knows what they were talking about? And then within a month or two later, those entities gave big loans to the Kushner Group, which is not actively...
I mean, close to $1 billion.
Yeah, and where these loans, at least in the case of Apollo, were much bigger than their normal-sized loans. And so there's... And apparently, like, you know, when I first saw this, I was like, okay, I know this looks shady, but let's apply the same kind of standards that, Yvonne, you and I were talking about when we were talking about the Clinton Global Initiative and all this kind of stuff, where we were saying just because they talked to that guy does not mean there was some kind of quid pro quo or anything like that. You know, it could be completely innocent.
I was thinking about that this week, okay, specifically, because I knew that this was going to come up, but here's the fucking difference. Okay, great. Right. There's a big, 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 huge, ginormous difference.
Yes.
Between somebody going and loaning $800 million to line my pocket versus I want to cure AIDS. Could you donate $100 million to my foundation?
Well, the argument people...
I mean, what is... Yeah. You're lining their pockets. The other one is... I am trying to save children. You know, could you, you know, kind, I know, you know, could you kindly donate to my foundation to save children?
Well, part of the counter argument to that, which was never proved, which is why part of this was, we considered it bullshit. part of the argument was the Clinton Foundation and everything was, and their charitable works. Yeah, yeah, they did some of that, but a lot of that money was actually going back to the Clintons individually. They were getting rich off it.
That's a bunch of fucking horseshit.
Well, that's how the Trump Foundation works.
Yes, true. That's true. Okay, but no. Okay, that's not the way the Clinton Count Foundation worked. Okay, and so, you know,
here's my point, though.
I mean, understand, we're talking about, okay, you know, look, the thing is that I have met a whole bunch of business executives that have foundations, mm-hmm. okay, that do the foundation part, okay, all right, and they will ask us to donate to the foundation, okay, all right, and I'm sorry, but I thought about it, and I'm like, look, there is – when I – there was one in Mexico where they were running a telethon for needy kids, for God's sakes. And yes, we were trying to do business with this company, but at the same time, you know, do I think that we may have looked better in front of them because we donated money to the foundation? Sure, but we were giving money to help homeless children, for God's sakes, okay? You know, I mean, I'm like, I'm trying to, like, you know, look, if we didn't get the business, I was like, well, we didn't get the damn business. We helped the homeless kids. But, you know, I'm not lining the guy's pocket and stuffing it with money. And there is a massive difference between one and the other.
So even giving him the benefit of doubt and saying there was no explicit quid pro quo, there was nothing like that going on.
Oh, my God. The appearance is just horrific.
The appearance is horrific. But also, apparently, you know, this is a direct violation of various conflict of interest laws. That, yes, they have a carve out for the president. They don't have a carve out
for Kushner.
Yeah, they don't have one for the staff. The staff is subject to these conflict of interest laws, and whether or not anything improper in terms of an explicit agreement happened there, which honestly, quite possibly, probably even, there was nothing explicit. Maybe Kushner hoped for something, but maybe they're smart enough. I don't know. They're pretty dumb. But maybe they're smart enough not to have made anything explicit, et cetera, et cetera. But there are specific laws and rules in place that say if this kind of conflict existed, that meeting should never have happened. And the meeting itself was illegal because of the potential for conflict of interest and the potential for some kind of deal, even if it isn't an explicit one, where, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, we'll give you this loan, you'll advocate for us on something or other that'll be beneficial to us, you know. And so, yeah, it quite possibly is illegal on its face just to have had that meeting, even if they did nothing explicit at that meeting that was improper other than having the meeting.
Right.
So Kushner may be in deep trouble just from this. Now, from all the lists of stuff going on, this may be like number 300 on Mueller's list, you know, but that's where we,
Jesus Christ, but it's just ridiculous.
That's where we come from.
Well, what about the other thing about what happened with Qatar?
Yes, I was going to get to that next. Go for it. You explain Qatar.
Well, so my understanding was that apparently he had gone to Qatar to ask them to invest certain money. To the Qatar Sovereign Fund to invest certain money, you know, in his businesses, and that they told him no,
right?
And by the way,
two businesses that desperately need that money to stay solvent.
Yes, correct. And so he went to them. He asked for the money. They shot him down. And then when the Qatar crisis erupted. Okay.
And this is where Qatar and Saudi Arabia were having a conflict, and Saudi Arabia and some other countries.
Saudi Arabia and the UAE, Bahrain, cut off Qatar completely. They cut all their land routes, cut off all air traffic.
And Tillerson was trying to make a deal to bring this to an end, and Kushner
was trying to sabotage it in every way possible.
And so the speculation here, of course, and
is retaliation,
is that this is retaliation for them not giving him his loan for his business. Now, again, this is what we have right now is a bunch of circumstantial things.
Here's the problem. Just the fact that he went to them and asked for the money, and then that he was actively doing that. You're telling me that he was philosophically opposed to it. The conflict of interest is fucking, I mean, beyond belief.
Now, just to be clear, did he go to Qatar himself, or did his dad or somebody else in the
company My understanding
go?
Was, is, okay, I got to go look back, but what I read was that he had gone and was requesting this from Qatar.
I think it was the other people in his company.
Okay, hold on. Okay. It doesn't say who went. I mean, it says it's from the Kushner companies. It doesn't say if Jared.
Yeah, no, I believe the case is that it was the Kushner companies going and asking for this loan. Now, what Jared had done, when all this started and people were talking about conflict of interest, he sold some of his stake to like his dad or something, but not a very big part of it. He remains a major investor in this company. He turned over management responsibility.
It was Jared Kushner's father that met with the Qatari Minister of Finance.
Jared Kushner's father is the primary one in charge of the business now, along with some of his other family members.
Okay, but now let's be straight about something. You think he didn't know?
Well, right, exactly. That's my point. Like, it's not he didn't go himself, which would be even worse. But so he did maintain that level of separation, but he still knows what's going on with his company. He still talks to them just like Donald Trump talks to, you know, Eric and Don Jr. and those folks. Yeah, they still are coordinating these events, so they know what's happening. So, yeah. So what it looks like is that they turned him down and he retaliated. Now, is that actually what happened? We don't know at this point. We just know that A happened and then B happened and it looks kind of bad. And presumably that's part of the kinds of things that Mueller is going to be looking into is there actual documentation that this kind of thing was a direct cause and effect? Did Kushner's financial entanglements have a direct result on American policy?
Look, let's be clear. I was like reading about this property. I mean, I knew the part that they were belly up on the mortgage. But the one thing that I wasn't clear, I knew it was Kushner Company. But Jared Kushner himself was the one that charged into buying this property, 666 Fifth Avenue. I love this address. It's the perfect address for these fuckers. Okay, it's brilliant, number one. And so he was the guy that charged into this. Okay, all right. So he's the one that caused this massive mess for his family in terms of going in there. Okay, all right. So, you know, the fact that he would be, you know, didn't know that they were going to the Qataris to basically beg him for money to get him out of the fucking hole they're in this property, which, by the way, the hole that they're in is not small. It's over $500 million hole. Okay, all right. It's not chump change. Okay, so the fact that he would know is absurd. He had to know. There's no way he didn't know.
Right, but the question is then, did he actually do this stuff sabotaging Tillerson's efforts in the Middle East?
Okay, so I have to believe that his mind. Okay, so in order to believe that being shot down for $500 million, okay, or plus, did not in some way impact his mind as to why he would be trying to fuck the Qataris, okay, all right, is, you know, it's just ridiculous to believe. I mean, you have to suspend. I mean, your suspension of just any, you know, disbelief of any of this has to go. It's ridiculous.
Well, you know, and this is again why every previous administration, at least in recent times, has been pretty damn strict about these conflict of interest rules and ethics rules, and basically saying, hey, if you've got some sort of relevant business interest, you can't be involved in the decision making related to that, or maybe you can't even be in fucking government.
Right.
And, you know, and that's why the standard has been, you know, you sell fucking everything and put it in a blind trust.
Exactly.
You know, as That's people right. keep saying, you know, Jimmy Carter sold his damn peanut farm.
Yep.
You know, you know, there's all of this kind of stuff. It's the normal way to deal with these things, because there's a fundamental recognition that if you have a lot of entangling economic activities, then you're going to be thinking about how every action you take potentially impacts your portfolio.
Right.
And so they try to avoid that. And how do you normally avoid that? You set up this blind trust at the beginning, and it's normal to like basically sell all the shit you have, or almost all the shit you have, so that the whole point of a blind trust is you don't know what you have.
You don't know what the hell is in it. Right.
So
exactly.
So like,
you know, even evil, Dr. Evil himself. What's his name? Cheney.
Yes.
He fucking went into a blind trust. Even Cheney. The fact that I can say that Cheney is more, you know, less of a fucking douche and a prick than any of these assholes is nothing short of amazing. To the level of douchebaggery we have here.
So Kushner is in deep. Over the course of the last week, it seems like thing after thing after thing, and we'll talk in the next segment about his clearances and all that kind of stuff, but every day, it seems like there's been more bad news for Jared Kushner. You know, I was shocked that we didn't have indictments on Friday, you know?
Well, look, let's be clear about the part about Kushner. You know, we were going to talk about, you know, all this other stuff about his security clearance. Look, obviously, I mean, this is bad enough, what's going on, that it's impacting that. All this, all these things swirling around. It's obviously, you know, we're talking about, well, we're speculating, we don't know. Well, obviously, we're not the only people that are thinking that this is a problem.
And one of the other stories that came out this last week, of course, was the intelligence services have intercepts of various foreign governments basically planning how can we influence Jared Kushner based on his financial entanglements.
Right.
Yeah, and there was a list of countries. I can't remember the whole list. It was like five or six countries.
There's a number of them, yeah.
Where basically, you know, we've got evidence that the governments of those countries were trying to figure out exactly this. How can we do something that will give us influence over Jared Kushner based on us doing something, either positive or negative or whatever, to influence his finances?
You gotta love it, huh?
Enough about Kushner for now. We'll get back into him in the next segment. The one other one I don't want to forget is Carl Icahn was also in the news again this week for something similar.
Well, wait. Oh, yes? Forget about that. Well, because. So Carl Icahn is a great advisor, lovely advisor.
He was. He left, remember, for similar reasons, like a few months ago.
Yeah. He stopped talking. Right. Whatever. Yeah. Look. Right. Yeah. They stopped talking. We all know that apparently Trump talks to all these people all the fucking time, even after they've left. Okay.
Yes.
That's been clearly established. Okay. Well, lo and behold, Carl Icahn last week, before this whole steel tariff thing goes, sold a huge position in steel that apparently he had.
Right.
Dumped it.
Now, you know, just to be clear, it must have been, is it a position on international steel? Because theoretically, domestic steel should be loving this.
There was a position that obviously was positive to know this information for. Okay, right. All right. I didn't read the exact position, but he made a significant trade that the only way you know, if you had this information, you basically made a nice killing.
You're betting on the price of steel going up.
Yeah. And so, or not that he was betting on the price of steel going up. Look, now you're going to make me look exactly what the transaction was, because I did not. I know I read that he made the trade, not exactly what the details of the trade are. Where the hell is it here? Yeah, obviously international. It had to be International Holdings because they were the ones that were getting nailed. So, yes.
Right.
Yep. So that's it.
Okay. So yeah, and of course, that's perfectly legit as well.
Of course, all legit. All of this is legit. You know, this administration's all above board by the book. They would never do anything that could even give the impression that, you know, something amiss. Right?
Right. And with that, let's take a break. We will come back and talk about the chaos within the White House itself, staffing, and Donald Trump's mental state again. I mean, we're not implying insanity or dementia here.
Just anger.
Just anger and agitation. And yeah, back after this.
Hello, this is Justin. I'm here to let you know about Sonic and Legends' other podcasts. The Wiki of the Day podcasts. Wiki of the Day comes in three varieties: popular, random, and featured. Each highlights a new Wikipedia article each day. They just pick the articles differently. This week on Random Wiki of the Day, you would have heard the summary for Kekkada. Kekkada, Greenlandic, Kekkada, the center, is a new municipality in western Greenland, operational from January 1, 2009. The municipality was named after its location in central western part of the country. Its population is 9,620 as of January 2013. The administrative center of the municipality is in Sisimiut, formerly called Holsteinsborg. It consists of the previously unincorporated area of Kangerlussuaq, as well as two former municipalities of western Greenland, Minutsoq Municipality, Sisimiut Municipality. That's it. See? Fun, entertaining, and educational, right? Okay, now look for and subscribe to the Wiki of the Day family of podcasts on your podcast playing software of choice, or just go to wikioftheday.com to check out our archives. Now back to Curmudgeon's Corner.
Okay, here we go, last segment. We are here, we are there, we are everywhere. I don't know.
We are?
Yeah, something like that. So, Hope Hicks is leaving.
You know, the other day, the question, you know, I keep saying, what is the question here? Is it really who's leaving?
Who's staying?
Right. Who the hell would stay? I would say that I think that we would probably make a bet that, nope, we don't think that anybody there is staying. Would you put anybody, who would you put money on to stay? Not even Melania.
No, not Melania, not Ivanka, not Jared, you know, not Kelly. There's nope. Nobody in Donald Trump's staff who's got a big enough name for us to know and care about.
Not Ben Carson, not
that you would want to put money on.
Nope, I would not put money on any of those things. Not one, not a one.
And the question is just, when do they each bail?
Right.
Like we know, like we have heard for ages that, you know, well, Tillerson just wants to make it to the 1 year mark, things like that. We've heard forever that, you know, Donald Trump hates Sessions and wishes he would quit and but won't fire him, but is trying to make his life miserable, etc. You know, because, you know, Donald Trump, Mr. You're Fired, doesn't like actually firing people. Because also that, you know, if he does actually fire, that it puts the blame on him. If he can just make them miserable and have them quit, then it's their choice, you know. But OK, Hope Hicks is leaving. Hope Hicks is one of Donald Trump's closest advisors. She's been talked about repeatedly as like another daughter to him. Basically, the you know, he trusts Ivanka and he trusts Hope Hicks. And she's been with him for a number of years before the campaign even started. She was by his side almost constantly during the campaign. You've heard the press talk all the time about how, you know, the one constant about dealing with Donald Trump was Hope Hicks for all this time, that she's a confidant. He talks to her about everything. He relies on her for everything. And now she's out. And there are a couple of things that led to that. One, she was, of course, dating that Porter guy who was beating up all his wives. And was involved in writing the defense of him, because, of course, there was no conflict of interest there either, right? And that didn't turn out very well, so ended up leaving black eyes on everybody. Ha ha. That was just wrong. I'm sorry. Anyway. That didn't work out well. And then she went and testified in front of Congress and basically admitted to lying for Donald Trump. Now, she tried to make it out as little white lies and didn't lie about anything significant, blah, blah, blah. But she basically admitted to lying for Donald Trump. And apparently Donald Trump did not like that and spent a lot of time yelling at her about that right afterwards. And she resigned the next day. Now, the word is that they've been, you know, she'd been thinking about it for months. Now, she'd only been in this job like 4 or 5 months.
Right.
You know, well,
that's in Trump term. That's like, you know, isn't it like dog years or something? I think that's a long time.
Well, it is. I mean, and also, like, also, if you think about this, it makes sense that she's been thinking about it for months, because who that took one of these jobs would not start thinking about leaving the second they started?
Correct. Yes. I mean, I think that would be the prudent thing.
You know, so, but the speculation has been that this is one of the last people in the White House around Donald Trump that he really knows and trusts.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the only other one right now really is, you know, Ivanka and Jared were in that category. If indeed all of these people who Donald Trump trusts are gone, the question is, well, how will he interact? How will he work with people? What will, because he doesn't like any of the people left around him. And even Ivanka and Jared, he's now apparently very mad at them because they're business dealings that we talked about in the last segment are starting to impact him now, and their decisions are starting to impact him. And so he's isolated, and the man's already unstable. Now you want to put him in a area where he thinks that absolutely everybody is against him, even the closest people on his staff.
I mean, you know, it's kind of hard to understand, but maybe it's not that hard to think about this. I'm thinking about this for 1 second. Look, this guy feels like everything around him is like either he can't trust. They don't do what he says. They lie, or they lie to him. You know, they tell him we're going to do this and then they don't do it. You know, we're talking about the tariffs or all the other stuff like that he keeps asking and people just keep pushing back on. Right. And then all these other people are supposedly or your family you're supposed to trust and they're getting you all into fucking trouble. Right.
So, because frankly, one legitimate interpretation of everything we've had with all these scandals. Now, I don't necessarily buy it, but one possible thing here is Donald Trump is just stumbling through this, trying to do his best, and he hasn't done anything wrong himself. But all of these people surrounding him, Manafort, Kushner, all of these folks have been corrupt from the very beginning and are screwing him over and are just using him.
Well, but I think, look, that's disingenuous because the guy's a dick and he thinks that his management style has been described as like inciting chaos in his organization. In this
like I
way.
Said, I didn't believe it. I'm just throwing that view out there.
So when you take that, he has created this damn chaos that is causing all of this shit. And he has hired all these fucking people and he's not a fucking You know what? Like I said, you hired all these people to cause you this trouble. Well, that's your fault. You're the one that didn't vet all of these things. You're the one that thought it was a great idea to have your fucking family working with you in the damn White House instead of getting professional people. None of the professional people wanted to work with you because you basically insulted the shit out of everybody. Okay? So, you know, this is his own making. In the end, his lack of, his incompetence in terms of hiring people to start off, or just the fact that he just thought, whatever, when he hired Manafort, the way that the deal was, he didn't think he was going to win. Who the fuck cares? So what if he's a crook? Nobody, you know, whatever. Listen, I am of the thought that Manafort never thought this asshole was going to win, so therefore they weren't going to catch him on any of the stupid shit he was doing anyway.
Well, as we've talked, I think that nobody thought they were going to win, Donald Trump included. Yeah, exactly. That wasn't the plan. Winning was not the plan.
The plan was to lose.
Yes. but Okay, so we've got these people leaving. We've got Donald Trump feeling more and more isolated. We've had rumors, and you know, like we said, who's not leaving, but the ones that are there, immediate rumors of potential problems. Besides Hope Hicks, there's obviously a question of Jared Kushner, because he and they go together, I guess, because he's lost a bunch of he was bumped down, lost his top secret clearance because of all the issues with clearances that have been coming out over the last few weeks. He still has a secret clearance, which, you know,
gets you nothing.
Gets you essentially nothing. I mean, I don't have a secret clearance, but, you know, everybody should have at least that base level in that area. So we got all of these people leaving. We've got, you know, there's an issue with Kushner and his clearances and whether or not he can actually do the job he's assigned to. So, or maybe he'll even be indicted. So maybe his time is limited, or even if his time is limited, is not limited. Maybe he can't do everything that he's supposed to be doing anyway, whatever the hell that was to begin with. But we also have talk about General Kelly and Donald Trump being fed up with him and now trying to go around him and not really being happy with him. We've got Donald Trump and Sessions that has been talked about forever.
Oh, God, I forgot about that, about him like laying into Sessions this week and then Sessions firing back in public.
Yeah, Sessions actually defended himself this time, because apparently Sessions has determined that, well, you know, screw it. He's not going to fire him, me, or if he does fire me, whatever. But Sessions has made a determination a long time ago at this point. He's not going to resign. Yeah. Right. Donald Trump can do whatever he wants. Sessions is not going to resign. Sessions will make Donald Trump fire him. And I think a lot of people in the administration, the ones who are in there who are taking the view that their job is to essentially control what Donald Trump does to make the results, the actual policy results, as rational as possible, those type of folks, I think, mostly have decided that they're sticking it out until Donald Trump fires him.
Let me ask you a question. Why do you think...
With the possible exception of like Tillerson or somebody, like, it sounds like both Tillerson and McMaster may be on their way out anyway, and have been looking around at opportunities, and Tillerson's the one-year anniversary and all that, but yeah, go ahead. What?
I was going to say, why do you think Ben Carson sticks around?
He's getting paid.
I thought he was rich, wasn't he?
He had some grifts going. You know, he sold some books, but like those things are still going. And it's not like these government jobs are particularly high paying, but
I'm saying.
But you know, he's getting his $30,000 office, and he may not get it at this point. Apparently, he's trying to cancel the order.
Now he's going to cancel the order. Okay.
Yeah, but apparently, I mean, talking about Ben Carson specifically, there were some reports a couple months ago of him trying to funnel business to various of his family members.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that, about the corruption with that.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, at some point, maybe he'll decide he's done. But as long as he feels like he's getting something out of it, he's going to stay. I mean, most of these cabinet positions, you know, the goal here is to not run the departments efficiently, because they don't believe in the departments. They don't believe the government should be involved.
That brings to mind, like, Rick Perry. I mean, what the hell? I don't know. Haven't heard from him in a long time.
Well, which in this case is actually probably a good sign.
Yes, the baby.
Rick Perry, like, of all of these other people, I mean, yeah, so far, like, I actually don't.
He's an idiot, but apparently he's not a corrupt idiot, so far.
But, you know, with this administration, it's like you're the odd man out if you're not, so he might be feeling left out and, like, you know.
Why am I not in on this? You know, why don't I get an $800 million loan?
Exactly. So the other question with all these people leaving is, who the hell does he replace them with? Because, you mentioned earlier, he's got the people he's got were not the A team anyway.
No, they weren't even the B team.
Right. Most of the people who had lots of experience in this area didn't want anything to do with the Trump administration. Donald Trump. Right. And by this area, I mean all of the respective areas.
And by the way, all those people that shut them down like summarily are now looking really fucking smart.
Well, and also, like, Donald Trump wasn't interested in them either. There's no respect for expertise or experience of any sort. It's all about loyalty and patronage and those kinds of things. And so, you know, Donald Trump wasn't looking for those people anyway. But he didn't have the A team. Like you said, he probably didn't even have the B team. Right. He had a bunch of C team members. Now you're getting rid of the C team, either because you're getting rid of them, or they're firing, or they're resigning, or whatever. Scandal A, scandal B, whatever. Or they're just fed up and don't want to do this anymore. And now what, are we going to the D team?
Well, in some cases, a problem with that. Oh, look, what I was reading, there was a story today. I can't remember where the hell I saw it, you know, because I see like a billion stories floating around anymore. How the hell does anybody keep track of any of this shit anymore? Talking about how a whole bunch of White House, ex-White House staffers, people have left, were moaning about the fact that they're having difficulty finding jobs after the White House. Now, historically, being at the White House was usually
you could get some nice cushy jobs after that.
Right. But not apparently after you've been in the Trump White House. And I'm like, and these people are all of a sudden like shocked that they can't find jobs, I guess. And I'm like thinking, really? Idiots? Really? So you thought this was going to be a resume builder to be in this shit show.
Well, two examples in terms of the finding people for some of these jobs. And these aren't high-level jobs I'm going to mention real quick, but they were both in the news in the last week or two. One was there was a position for administrator of what was it? It was a like Veterans Affairs for Native Americans or something like that. I forget exactly the role, but it was a large-scale health administration role for Native American populations. And the person that Donald Trump had nominated had to withdraw themselves from nomination when the Senate committee investigating, doing the hearing to, you know, approve the nomination, found out that he wasn't actually a hospital administrator as had been listed on his resume.
What was he?
He was the front desk attendant at the hospital.
I guess.
You know, so and they wanted to put him in charge of healthcare for Native Americans.
I mean, come on, man, come on! How the fuck?
I think he may have been a manager at least, but he wasn't like the level of he had well inflated his resume. And this is just an example of, and apparently he'd been involved in the campaign in some way. And so they're like, oh, we'll give you a job, you know, but in no way even remotely qualified for the job they were putting him up for. The other example of that is apparently Donald Trump's leading candidate to head the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA.
Oh my God. Yes. He wanted to fucking push his private pilot.
Yes. He wants the person who piloted Trump Force One during the campaign, to be the head of.
Now let's be clear. All the shit that we've just talked about has only been really the last week, right?
Last couple weeks, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah, so I don't know. And we were talking about all the staffing part. I almost forgot to head back to Donald Trump himself, and then that'll be the last thing before we end the show, there have been a number of reports this week that basically have Donald Trump is extremely angry right now, extremely, upset about everything. He's yelling about Sessions. He's yelling about Hope Hicks. He's yelling about this. He's yelling about that. He's upset about how his staff has been reacting to things like we've been saying. He's determined that everybody's just trying to obstruct and not do what he's asking them to. And I saw a headline earlier today that his staff is more worried about him than they have been in a long time. So not just like external people like us looking at it, but like people within the White House staff basically saying,
well, think about all the shit that's happened this last month. I mean, between all the additional indictments, all the additional Russia information, every time that he's trying to like somehow say it's a witch hunt, and then more shit comes out. The Jared shit, the security clearance shit, the corruption, the conflict. I mean, it's just everywhere, man. I mean, the man, I mean, if he wasn't feeling hounded, and if he wasn't feeling, I mean, you know, I'd be, you know, it'd be a miracle.
Yeah, I mean, and do you feel like he actually, like, I know there's no way to really know this, but do you feel like Donald Trump actually believes in his heart of heart that he's done absolutely nothing wrong and it's just the people around him screwing him? Or do you think he understands that he's actually been going over some line, whether or not there was quote unquote collusion?
I do think he believes his own bullshit.
Yeah.
In his own, you know, he believes his own bullshit. I mean, the man is just, the man lies so much that I really think that this asshole can't tell the difference between what the hell's a truth and what the fuck is a lie. Because he lies so often. I mean, it's been documented.
Yeah.
I mean, when you spew so many lie after lie after lie, how could you keep straight what the fuck the truth is and what's a lie? I mean, a man makes up his own fantasy world.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think he does believe this stuff that he says. And I think he's also I think there are probably are some memory issues. I think there probably are just some, you know, the whole, like, it's the last person he talked to kind of stuff that we've talked about since the campaign, I think represents sort of, I'm not saying it's any sort of mental illness. It's just how his mind works.
Right.
And has for a long time that, you know, he is very much in the moment. He's very much about what's right now. We've said before, like, I've made the point of lying versus bullshitting in that he doesn't care what the truth is. It's just not a concept that matters to him. The words are tools to manipulate the situation of the moment. I don't know what he believes, but I would not be surprised at all if his fundamental feeling is, oh my God, everybody is out to get me. And now it's even my own family. You know,
yeah.
Jared and Ivanka are trying to screw me too.
Yep.
You know? Yeah. And this is a very dangerous position to be in. And we talked about the isolation as the people who he did trust are moving away or losing his trust. And you get the position where this guy, who wasn't all that stable to begin with, is now isolated and alone and angry and still invested in huge amounts of power. Now, yeah. Yes. I mean, the very thing that he's frustrated about that his staff isn't doing what he wants them to do, maybe is a saving grace here, that his random impulse of the moment doesn't automatically become something real. But it's still a very dangerous situation. And I don't know if, like, you know, like, these articles are all about, like, oh, this is worse than we've seen him before. I don't know. We've seen him in some pretty bad states before, but I guess we'll see. The question is, does this keep building and getting worse, or does he get a few weeks off where things calm down again? And
no, I think this is getting worse in an accelerated fashion. This is not getting better anytime soon. No.
The Mueller train is coming. Despite the assurances of Trump's lawyers, it is not nearing the end. There is more and worse to come.
And part of the problem also is that he also has a whole bunch of C-level player lawyers.
Yeah. Well, everyone surrounding him, because they're not picked because they're good. They're picked because he perceives them as loyal to him.
Right.
And so he gets mediocre support from all around. Yep. And then the few people that he brings in because they've got some sort of external expertise don't do everything he says. And therefore, he gets mad at them. And that's what we get with, Rosenstein and even Sessions, for God's sake. I don't want to be defending Sessions, but the fundamental point of conflict was Sessions did the right thing and recused himself.
Right. Correct.
You know? So.
So there was this guy, what the hell? I saw this on, I shared this in our Slack.
Yeah.
Donnie Deutsch. Donnie Deutsch was a guy that worked with Trump on his TV show for a while. Okay, so knows him pretty well. I mean, considering he was on a TV show. And his quote about, because how he's known him, said, what is Trump capable of doing at the expense of the world or United States or the consumer to save himself? I'm concerned that this is a harbinger of things to come. What will he do with North Korea at the expense of the rest of the world? Okay. And then said something. Wait. You're really starting to see the beginning of a cornered Donald Trump. Okay. There was the quote. Oh. According to Donald Trump, they will destroy the world to save his hide.
There you
that
go.
That was the quote.
And
that's ugh.
And on that cheery note, let's end the show.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So thanks everybody again for making it through another Curmudgeon's Corner. As usual, the two things we end the show with, go to Facebook.com/curmudgeonscorner. Like the show, share the episodes with your friends, comment on and tell us what you think of what's going on. If you really like the show, you can contribute to help with some of the expenses of the show at patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner. There are a number of things you can get at different contribution levels. At $2 a month and above, you can get access to our Curmudgeon's Corner Slack and come join us and talk to us throughout the week, which is always fun. We have some good discussions on there and share articles as they come up through the course of the week. And what else? Twitter. We don't mention this every week, but I'm Abulsme on Twitter, A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Yvonne is at I-M-B-O-U, I-M-B-O-U. And you can follow us, and we say various things during the week as well. That's it, I think. Hey, everybody, have a great week. We'll talk to you again next time. Goodbye.
Maybe less stuff will happen between here and next.
Oh, yeah, good luck with that.
Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.